The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Jonathan Ernie. Jonathan is a partner at Shepherd Mullin here in Washington, D.C. Jonathan is one of those folks who focuses on a lot on GSA schedule contracting, you know, quite a bit, and deals with GSA, and right now is a very interesting time. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me again.
Well, I'm looking forward to this discussion. They're always fun, Jonathan, and we should get right at it. What's the biggest, latest thing that's happened in the GSA schedules world?
Well, I bet you're talking, Roger, about the transactional data reporting rule.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, it's, that is definitely the biggest, you know, and I realize, by the way, as I'm saying this, how much of a geek I sound like, but this is definitely the biggest thing since, like, you know, the 1980 change to the price reductions clause.
Right.
This is a big deal.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's fine. You can sound like a geek all you want on my show, man. That's,
I know.
Like,
I know.
It's,
I feel good.
For procurement.
No, I'm in very good company.
Yes, that's right. So the rule does a number of different things, and we're going to walk through those things. It is a fundamental change to the program and its pricing approach. With the reform or elimination of the traditional price reduction clause and CSP. But first, let's just talk about a little bit about how we got to where we are, some of the history behind this, and leading up to this pilot program that GSA is launching.
Yeah. There's actually a couple of different things that seem to have brought us where we are now. So certainly on the compliance side, you know that industry has been beating up the price reductions clause and the CSPF, the commercial practices format, for years and years and years. And then more recently, the government's own blue ribbon panel, the mass panel, beat up the price reductions clause as well, and started even more questioning the propriety of these various tools, price reductions clause and CSP. And so you have that. And at the same time, you have GSA and OMB continuing to beat up government pricing and GSA pricing. And that's been pushing GSA to look for ways to drive pricing down more and more and more. Hey, so you put this all together.
And don't forget DPAP. They beat up GSA schedule
right.
pricing
okay.
too, right?
Sure. Everyone's beating up the pricing. Except, I guess not everyone. Because actually, if you ask me, I think GSA is way over-focused on low prices. And I think they're going to end up getting, you know, what they pay for. But
right. mm-hmm.
but we'll leave that aside for now. And then at the same time, you have GSA getting now to a position where it has the capability to gather and use more data than it ever did before. So you put all that together, and some time ago, GSA came up with a rule to try to solve all their problems, and that rule was hey, let's start collecting transactional data, meaning let's figure out what the government customers are paying when they buy products. And it's interesting, the government realized that it didn't have the capability to capture those data, which I think is interesting of itself, because you'd think it should be the government's data, but the government recognized it didn't have the ability to do it. So it said, well, let's make our contractors gather those data. And that turned into this transactional data reporting rule, which when the proposed rule came out, it required companies to gather certain data elements at the point of sale, you know, type elements, and then report those back. And then GSA would use those data to negotiate lower prices. Now, interestingly, whenever the government's going to impose a new burden on contractors, as they would be doing here, but burdens matter because the government can't just add to a burden. So the government needs an offsetting burden. When the proposed rule came out, the government suggested, well, as the offsetting burden, what we'll do is we'll get rid of certain aspects of the price reductions clause.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But as you'll recall, what they didn't do is they didn't say, let's get rid of the CSP. So that not only stayed in place, but it actually got worse. And so when industry saw this burden analysis. It was actually fascinating because you wrote this and you're for the coalition. I wrote this and most other commentators out there wrote about this. The government grossly underestimated the burden reduction of this new plan. Absolutely appallingly underestimated. So a lot of negative comments came back. And of course, as you'd expect, industry hated the new rule. The IG was worried about any diminution of the power of the price reductions clause, so they weren't really happy. And GSA went back to the drawing board.
Right. Well, in one aspect, what made it worse, right, with the CSP, is that GSA made these pronouncements in the write-up that they would ask for updated CSP for at any point and any time during contract performance, and they would use that for purposes of renegotiating pricing. Which, I mean, I get your opinion on it, but it seems to me that creates a whole new price reduction clause in a certain sense where you have to literally track everything. So it wasn't the CSP by itself. It's the fact that that language and around what they were going to do with it on a constant basis.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That was the big kind of the big red herring almost, the big flaw in that initial ointment, that the COs got more power to request more frequent CSPs.
Right.
You're exactly right. And that was just one of the reasons why the burden analysis was so out of whack. So and I actually think, to my surprise, GSA management was surprised by the reaction, which I'm a little concerned that they missed this little flaw. But yeah, GSA was very surprised.
Right.
Now, to their credit, they went back to the drawing board and they put seemingly some real thought into significant changes, which then came out recently as the final rule. And there's a lot more kind of permutations along the way, but in a big picture, that kind of brings us where we are
right
now.
Just one aspect of it that I don't get your thoughts on too is that part of this, I think this administration with category management, looking to the UK for its category quote management, structure approach strategy for. Managing the procurement system relies heavily on data and analysis of data. So, so another piece of this, as part of it, all the stuff you describe is right on point. In addition, they had this little, this little thing called category management, which also sort of, timing is everything. So, hey, they're looking to get rid of the price reduction clause. They've got transactional data ideas. They want to facilitate category management. We'll wrap it all up in one big bow.
Yeah, so I think that's definitely part of the... I think that's part of the thought process. I continue to be a little concerned with this whole category management concept because the government's plan, at least if you read the text, is that they are magically going to have these experts, these category management experts, many of whom I suspect have really never spent time in industry managing huge categories or huge supply chains. So I'm curious what training these folks are going to get and how they're going to magically become category experts. Now, maybe GSA's plan is actually to go out into industry and bring in people who truly are category experts because they exist.
Right.
But that's it doesn't sound that way. It sounds more like they're going to take people who were, a CS or a CO or an analyst. Yeah. Most of them
are people who are career government folks who are working in particular procurement operations related to like healthcare or whatever.
Yeah.
But to your point, and that's a great point, to category managers, and they did hire Kim Luke, who was former HP executive, to be the IT category manager, and he just recently left. But, that seems to me, if you're going to hire someone to do this kind of thing, and it's no problem with anybody who's doing the job, but
right,
you'd want to get some outside industry experience as part of the team, whether it's the leadership of the particular category or as part of the leadership team. I think it's important to do that.
Absolutely. And for many reasons. One particular reason is because unless this new scheme is supposed to be price above all else, unless that's the goal, and GSA claims that's not the goal here, and I'm sure we'll get to after a break. But if the goal is not price above all else, then you need category managers who understand the nuances of different terms and conditions, different geographic locations of the sale, different types of contracts. All these things affect pricing in real life. And I continue to be very concerned that what's going to happen here is that the COs and the CSs and the category managers are going to dispense with all those differences. They're going to look into their magic transactional data box, find a low price, and say, okay, contractor, you have to meet that price. And right. I know we'll talk more about that when we get to the final
We're up against the break, but I love that description, the magic transaction data box.
Data box. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to write
that
down.
You've got to get that acronym
down.
Okay. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion of the transactional data reporting rule and start to get a little bit into some of the specifics of it. My guest today is Jonathan Arney. He is a partner at Shepherd Mullin, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jonathan Arney. He is a partner at Shepherd Mullin here in Washington, D.C., and we're having a very extensive conversation regarding the transactional data reporting rule. It just came out on June 23rd, excuse me. In the first segment, Jonathan gave a great summary of the history behind a lot of how this came to be to a certain extent. So, again, it took a fair amount of time, over a year, that GSA for it to reconcile the comments. It's clear that GSA did listen to the concerns and in some cases criticisms expressed by stakeholders across the spectrum. And has tried, I'll put it that way, to address those concerns. So, and some of the things, again, let's get into some of the specifics with regard to, we did mention the PRC and CSP. Let's go over that again. Jonathan?
Yeah, so you're right. I think the government did try to get it right here. And I submit that there's probably no perfect Federal Register, no perfect clauses, but they certainly did try here. So the first big change as we moved into the final rule is really the change in the burden estimate, and it's worth starting there, even though it sounds a little not concrete.
Yes.
So GSA recognized that their prior estimate of how long it would take a company to comply. And that's what the burden estimate is, right? How many hours is it going to take you to comply, translated to dollars. And so they realized that the prior estimate, which I forget, what you might remember, Roger, what it was like six hours.
To implement.
Right, yes. 6 hours to implement, it's just crazy. So that was a big change. And the new rule dramatically increased the burden estimate in terms of implementation and in terms of administration. Now, remember what we talked about earlier. We talked about you have to kind of have these offsetting burdens, right? So how do you offset such a high burden estimate now? Well, the way is you get rid of the thing that was the burden driver previously, which is the price reductions clause and the CSP. So unlike the proposed rule, which left the CSP in play, and in fact, as we said, even enhanced it, the final rule took the PRC out of play and took the CSPS out of play. And so that's the biggest, most notable change to the final rule. And this time, when they say the PRC and the CSPF are gone, it is a correct statement. This rule does get rid of it, whereas the proposed rule didn't.
Right. Yeah, and the proposed rule actually inserted even stronger CSP.
As we said, It upped the game. But here it's gone. Now that should be very good news to many companies because previously the CSP was the most burdensome, complicated, risk-inducing piece of schedule contracting, and the PRC was second in line as the second most burdensome, risk-inducing piece of contracting, right? So with those things moving out, sleeping with the fishes, why isn't this all a good thing, right? And that's where you have to start reading this rule very closely.
Right. And I would go back to, I think it's fair to say that, the GSA did adjust the burden and
absolutely,
I think made efforts in that area. But I still think, and I get this sense, that government just doesn't understand the burdens that it imposes in so many. I know I'm preaching to the choir,
yeah.
But for somehow folks think that a company can turn around and press a button and out comes all this data without having to make major investments, right, in new systems, new reporting, new individuals hired to actually review and touch all the information. And if you have several different business units that are, you know, operating under your contract, the complexities here, that's one area where I think there should have been more dialogue about, you know, the burden associated with the transactional data information itself.
So you know, I think in fairness to the government, I think that two things go on frequently when we deal with government regs. I think one, the government, as you say, doesn't have any sense of what their rules do to companies and how hard companies try to comply and how expensive it is. I think they have really no sense. Likewise, I sometimes think contractors don't have a good sense of the government's pressures and the government's...
I think that's very true.
You know, and the hills the government has to climb. I think it's just, it's frequent kind of two ships passing in the night. And that's why I don't know if I'm allowed to give a pitch to the coalition here because there might be some conflict, you being part of the coalition.
Okay.
But I'll tell
you. Okay, please go ahead.
Go ahead, right?
Right.
That's one of the things I love about the coalition, that it brings the government and industry together and they can actually talk about these things.
Right.
But I think here still an opportunity was missed because we are still ships passing in the night. And your point about the burdens and the costs of implementation administration, I grant you that's huge here and under-realized, but to me, the bigger problem here is what I think is going to be an irrational pressure on reducing prices. Now, I don't think price reduction is irrational. I think irrational price reduction is irrational. And what we're going to see here is we're going to see contracting officers, contracting specialists, ordering activity folks going into the magic transactional data box, finding low prices that they have no reason to know are comparable or not, and then pushing contractors to reduce prices regardless of terms or conditions. And why is this just not me making up something that might happen? Because this is exactly what happened when the government went to its horizontal data magic tool.
Right. Horizontal pricing initiative.
Right. So we know precisely this is what COs do. Now the government clearly recognizes this concern because when you read the Federal Register notice, which I know you've read multiple times, like every third paragraph, I'm exaggerating only slightly, every third paragraph is a reminder that the COs and CSs are going to be well-trained. They're going to be told again and again that they have to consider terms and conditions different in geographic location of sale, all those things, so it's not just about price.
Right, and there's specific language saying this is not low price regardless,
right,
and we want best value. And
I mean,
it's almost do you protest too much.
Thou dost protest too much, right? Exactly what I was going to say. The fact that that's every other paragraph in here suggests that our concerns are not unwarranted. But what we know is that's exactly what happened with horizontal pricing. We're all worried about it here, and there's every reason to believe that's going to happen. So let's use a specific example to make sure everyone gets the point about why this pressure is so risky. So because I call this the death spiral. I'm sure I didn't invent the term, but that's how I think of this. So you're a schedule contractor. You know, you put in, you have some nice low schedule pricing, it's on schedule. Then you go out, you have a good opportunity for the Navy. And the Navy wants a percentage off your schedule, right? So you give the Navy a discount. Well, then the price you're selling to the Navy goes back into the transactional data magic box. And then your CO looks at those new lower prices and says, I want those as my schedule pricing now. Which, of course, then prompts the Navy to demand its percentage off your new schedule prices. And then you have this kind of race to the bottom. And what's going to happen over time is it's going to reward companies who take all value out of the proposition, right? It'll reward companies that skimp on customer service, that skimp on time to delivery, that skimp on warranty, that skimp on really even the quality of the product. And ultimately it'll boomerang back because the government doesn't want to buy, I don't know what I can say on the radio. The government doesn't want to buy stuff that's not quality.
Right. Well, the government does. It wants to buy you know, it wants to do business and with the commercial marketplace, and it wants value. But you know, the only, you know, unfortunately, and you go back to your point about stakeholders. Yeah, you know, the government folks, they have all kinds of stakeholders and the pressures on them in this environment. And there is, you know, there needs to be understanding of that. But you know, the one pure objective measure that is easy to measure that's out there, and the only one anybody seems to have a handle on, is price. Like, and I saved the government money because I got this price as opposed to a previous price without, you know,
right, and
looking
no,
at comparable terms and conditions.
Right. And so there's no recognition that when you just saved the government those 50 cents, you also abandoned a phone number to call when the product goes wrong, customer support, a return policy, a warranty, right? All these other value things that are going to disappear because the only thing we seem to be measuring is price. So I think when companies look at this and they have to make the decision as to whether to opt into this pilot or not.
Right, and right at that point, you can pick up.
Well, this
on
is like
your
a cliffhanger.
This is a
no one's perfect. Tuning off now.
Right. So my guest today is Jonathan Ernie, partner with Shepard Mullin. We're talking about transactional data and GSA schedules. And Jonathan will come back and go through the analysis, what companies need to think about when they're going to be doing GSA, their GSA schedule contracts in the future. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jonathan Ernie. He's a partner at Shepard Mullin here in Washington, D.C. We're talking about GSA schedules and, you know, the transactional data reporting rule, and now we get into what it means for the companies in particular. We had that cliffhanger at the, I can't even say it, the cliffhanger. It makes me nervous.
You're too excited.
I'm
know.
Too excited. I'm yeah. looking forward to it. So I'm going to turn it right over to you. What do you want to tell contractors out there?
Well, so I guess to make the cliffhanger make some sense, people need to know that this rule doesn't just automatically apply to an existing schedule holder. So since this is a material change to a contract, the government recognized that current contracts would have to be modified. They'd have to be a bilateral modification, which means that contractor would have to have a choice to accept it or not. So there are three different ways I think this new clause comes into being. One, if you're a current schedule holder, you have to make the choice of opting into the pilot or not. And as people probably know, the pilot doesn't apply to all schedules anyway. It only applies to some. But those companies would have to decide whether to opt in. If you're a new schedule contractor, this new provision is just going to be a term of the solicitation. You'll have no choice. And then if you're a current contract holder that is renewing a schedule, I think that the clause is going to be part of the renewal solicitation, so you're going to have no choice either. So my cliffhanger was focusing on those companies that already have a schedule that now have to make a decision.
Right, but let me ask you a question first. So, under the scenario about the option, so if somebody has an option, it's a unilateral right. I know in GSA schedule world, there are often lots of negotiations and bilateral agreements around the exercise of the option, right, in renegotiation or pricing. Now, the question will be if, in fact, someone is given the choice of either accept it or not, is that a unilateral change that's, you know, potentially inconsistent with Part 12 of the FAR? I'm really getting geeky.
Are you actually thinking that a company coming up to renewal is going to be given a choice?
No, they're not.
No, there'll be
right.
no
that's
choice.
That's my point. It should be the choice. It should be consistent with the contract terms. That's a material change.
Yeah, but that's way too geeky contractual. There's,
is it?
No,
okay.
You're correct, I think,
right.
as a matter of law.
Right,
but,
right.
But law doesn't matter here. You're these,
that's right.
Right.
Doesn't seem to.
No. It's going to be in the solicitation for the renewal, and it's going to be a take it or leave it.
Right.
Take it or leave it thing.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. But for those companies out there that have a schedule, they do have to make a decision. And they have to decide whether they want to opt in or not. And I think what you're really doing, when it comes down to it, you're balancing two things. You're balancing the clear reduction of risk by getting rid of the CSP and getting rid of the PRC versus what I think is going to be the clear irrational pressure to drive prices down. And that's what you're balancing. And then you're making that cost-benefit analysis in the context of how much time you have until it applies to you automatically anyway, right? If you're 1 year away from your renewal, well, you know, you're going to be stuck with it anyway. So I think companies have to make that balance by thinking about, you know, their compliance program, thinking about the risk of the way their price reductions clause is written, thinking about the complexity of their pricing, which then, you know, tells us something about how risky the CSP is, and then on the other side, thinking about how volatile pricing is in your industry, how many different contracts do you have based on your schedule pricing that could, you know, fall into this death spiral, and then you really, you know, at the end of the day, you're doing a cost benefit analysis here, like in many other things, but
right. I think also, yeah, it's a big one, and I think you're also going to be looking too, I think, about the factoring in the cost of the reporting, because in some instances, some cases, the complexity of what a contractor does, like if it's customizable and you're trying to report all that information, and there's different, quote, part numbers and all that goes into it, that's going to be a challenge in and of itself. And that gets back to your question, too. Then if it's a customizable solution or, you know, IT product, how, without knowing the details of how it was customized, the information that GSA is getting is not going to tell them that, to know whether or not, and that's a commercial practice in many areas, right? Is that fair concern?
Oh, sure. Right. We're not talking COTS products here. We're talking commercial items,
right,
which may or may not be COTS.
Right.
And so for people who don't know the distinction, a COT, a commercial off-the-shelf product, is one that's not changed at all. It's exactly as it is on the shelf, exactly as you sell it to others. A commercial item, though, those can be a little different, and those can be modified. And,
right. And it's customary practice in
absolutely.
Some industry, right?
Right. And so, and what's going to happen here, and the Federal Register notice alludes to this, that you're going to have COs comparing not similar products, or at least not the same products. And the Federal Register says that those comparisons are still going to be useful.
Right, and that's a great point you're making, because that's a big deal, because the horizontal pricing initiatives and those things are supposed to be, quote, for identical.
Items.
This rule expands that beyond.
Right. So companies, if companies opt into this, they're going to have to be vigilant in standing up for their rights, really, and engaging the contracting officer in these substantive discussions about the products. What I've seen, sadly, over the years, is I've seen less willingness on the part of contracting officers to engage in those discussions. Like, far more contracting officers nowadays than when you and I were young just say, sorry, this is the way it is, take it or leave it. But in this world here, that approach can't work. Like that will be a disastrous approach for companies and for the program. So companies are going to have to engage the COs in these meaningful discussions about how some pricing may or may not be relevant.
Right. And so what you're really saying, there's a big risk that the magic transactional data box
the MTDB.
Yeah, will be sort of deciding prices without sort of... it's sort of like you got the machine doing it.
Yes, I am convinced that is where the big problem is going to come up. And clearly GSA thinks I'm right, because as you said before, the number of times they convince me in the letter that it's not going to happen. Right? I mean, the more times someone tries to convince me X isn't going to happen, the more convinced I am. Yeah,
that's
just
that spoken
X
as a true
happen.
Lawyer right there. So what about training? Training for the COs and
clearly training is important here and critical. I've been underwhelmed by GSA's training in the past. I think that it's too bad, because I think most contracting officers, you know, are smart and really want to do the right thing, but they've been underserved by the institution. So when I hear now there's going to be great training, I have not been given any reason to believe that to be true yet. Now, I hope it is, because the COs deserve it and the program deserves it.
Right. Well, do you think, you know, one of the thoughts I had is perhaps in developing that training, it should be something that all stakeholders have an opportunity to provide some insights and feedback on. If you want to, you know, if you're trying to mirror commercial practice and, you know, have competition, you know, what you're looking at from a pricing perspective, I think the, you know, just like the industry can learn from government on the government's, you know, stakeholders and its pressures, I think government can learn from industry about what really is important and how you really do, you know, structure something.
Absolutely. I remember years ago, I went to a GSA expo, and I was walking through looking.
What was that?
when these things used to exist. Yeah. And I remember walking down, looking at all the training programs, and what struck me was, with only a couple of exceptions, it was all GSA people training GSA people. And I always found that weird, because when I train my people at my firm, I want them to hear from industry and lawyers and government. Like, right. I want them to hear all the opposing perspectives, because that makes us better and smarter. And so I was always struck that GSA didn't have that attitude. They weren't bringing in quite as many outsiders. I like your idea. I think now, I mean, everyone has something to offer everyone else.
Right.
So,
nobody's got a, you know, has got a monopoly on good ideas.
And we're all struggling with this together. Yeah. So let's all train together. Let's learn together. Let's not have any internal secret guidance memos here, right? Let's let everyone know how people are supposed to act. I shouldn't have to dig through some archive to find a PIB or an acquisition letter that the public doesn't know about.
And you're really getting geeky.
Yeah. Well, you wrote those back when you were with the government. But this training is going to be critical here, and GSA needs to find some way to give industry confidence.
Well, it's
that
about
the training's meaningful.
Yeah, it's about accountability, and I think it goes both ways: accountability on government and industry side.
Absolutely,
right? And that's one way to get there. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other nuggets in the rule, particularly this new portal or website that.
Right. And we should talk about how this happens in real life.
Right. Absolutely. We can do that first when we come back. My guest today is Jonathan Ernie. He is a partner at Shepherd Mullin, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jonathan Ernie. He is a partner at Shepherd Mullin, and we are talking about GSA schedules and the transactional data reporting rule, which actually also make a note that it does not apply to the VA schedules program. They're not included. And actually also the clause, it'd be remiss if we just didn't mention it, acknowledge it, the real interesting discussions about PRC and all this stuff, but it also is available or be implemented on GSA's other contract vehicles, ITGWAX, all those things. And some of those contracts already have data reporting of a certain sort. And I think those programs have an option to use the clause or keep what they're doing, I believe. So
right. And along those lines, we should also just remind everyone that since it's a pilot program, it doesn't apply to all schedules. So,
right.
For example, most services schedules are not part of the pilot.
Right. That's right. It's the engineering piece on the professional services schedule, and and then there's, in some instances it may be IT services, and some instances may not be, depending on what you already have on your contract under other sins where you do have to report. But we're getting way down in the weeds.
Yeah.
I want to just, you know, because we talked about training, and with the removal of the CSP, there's sort of, okay, well, what does that training look like? What are contracting officers going to be doing with regard to negotiation? And as someone who, Jonathan, who's participated and advised companies, you know, give us your sort of real-life scenario, what may or may not happen.
Well, you know, it is a little difficult to figure out what that looks like. Because, so say you're a new company, you trot on down, you walk in, talking figuratively, you walk in with your offer, and you just say, okay, I'm going to offer my widget X to you for $10. And you have no backup for this, and you have no comparison of how you sell it to your other customers. You have nothing. In fact, you might sell it to your other customers for $1. You might sell it to your other customers for $100. It doesn't matter. You're just offering a price, presumably. And then GSA, you know, puts your product into the magic transactional data box, And out pops data, which suggests presumably to the CO whether your price is high or low. And if it's within a band, then I guess GSA says your price is fair and reasonable and adds it. Even if you're selling it elsewhere more cheaply, right? And that's an important point.
Yeah.
So that happens. Now, what happens to the many products that there's not enough data in the magic box, or there's not enough comparable data? So in that case, everyone needs to keep this in mind. That case, the CO gets to come back to you and find another means of assessing the fairness and reasonableness of your pricing. So what might those other means be? Well, all the stuff that used to be in the CSPF, presumably, right? They can ask you to do the market research. They can ask you how you sell it to other customers, I guess. They can ask you for a cost buildup. The bottom line is, if there's not adequate transactional data, then the government has to find some way to assess the pricing.
Right, right. So, yeah, I mean, they'll look to Part 15 of the FAR.
Right, and kind of walk down the list of priority as to what you look at.
Well, so what do you think that, I mean, to me, I guess, I'd be concerned about, again, we get back to the rollout and the training and all that thing. You know, we've got a contracting officer workforce that's basically been negotiating a particular way.
Right.
Basing off the CSPs. Now it's sort of, Katie by the door, it's a different approach. And, with your long-term experience with GSA, what do you think that means?
So what I think it means as a lawyer, I'm a studier of human nature, right? That's what you and I do, right? Yeah. More than anything else, more than remembering the rules, more than reading the FAR, we kind of learn about people. And one of the many things we know about people is people revert to what they're comfortable with very quickly. Yeah. And so I think what you'll see here, just knowing people as I do, that where the magic box doesn't spit out really great information, you're going to see people reverting back to things similar to the CSP. They just won't call it a CSP.
Right.
It'll be the non-CSP.
Right. It's like,
but I'll have similar information. So you have that whole, I'm not saying the process is necessarily going to be bad. I'm just saying it's a big unknown as to how this is going to work. And then I think you go to the next step and you say, okay, so now I got my widget on schedule and I got it on for X dollars. Now, what happens next, right? When can the CO come back to me just out of the blue and say, I want you to reduce your schedule price now? And when you read the change to the price reductions clause, it certainly looks like the CO can come back to you anytime she wants to say, I now have some new transactional data. I want you to lower your price. And how that frightens me, by the way, a very wise man, Roger, said to me not long ago, he said, this new rule actually brings us back to the old price reductions clause pre-1990 when every sale could trigger the clause, including sales to the government. Now, just so everyone else understands, yes, you said that to me, Roger, and I that scares me here.
That's the risk, yes.
Right. If every time there's new transactional data that looks like price is lower, the CO comes back to you and says lower your price, that really is like the old price reduction clause, like you said.
Rather than being formally, it's going to be to become the operational framework by which the contract, that's the risk.
Right.
The contract.
So back in the old days, back in the pre-90 days, I as a contractor, I had to worry about giving a discount to the Navy, right? Because that one-off discount would then trigger my clause and I'd have to give it to everyone. Now, I'm not sure I'm right on this, but now I think I have to worry again about giving a discount to the Navy because that low price is ending up back in the magic box, which then comes back to me and GSA says, lower your price. Right. Now maybe because there's going to be so much data in the magic box, my concern is not going to be realized and time will tell. Right. I'm still concerned.
Right. Well, yeah. And the reason why, GSA, that was the 1980s version of the price reduction clause. And the reason GSA moved away from it is because customer agents were saying the price, I can't get a spot discount. The prices aren't dynamic. They're sort of set in stone and there's no ability for better reflect the commercial marketplace because people won't offer the lower prices. And the flip side is that the companies would say, I want to offer the lower prices. I want to give spot discounts, but I can't because the risk to me.
I can't afford it.
Right. You can't afford to do it. So it created a program where if people complain about the pricing now on the schedules, which I think is on a large part a red herring in most instances from the complaints that I've heard from various circles. Back then, there were real complaints about the lack of any dynamic commercial market. And the lack of any competition for orders.
Yeah.
So we beat that to death.
Yeah, we did.
We got a couple minutes left, so I want to ask you a couple. I want to ask you about this. There's, and I'm using my term, and I don't know if it's the right term. This, and another interesting note out of the rule is that GSA announced that it was going to, or FAS is going to create a website, a portal, to share information that comes out of transactional data reporting. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So I put this in the category of what possibly could go wrong there, right?
Okay.
So we're gathering tons of proprietary data. We're putting it into a new and presumably untested portal. We're going to be making some of it purportedly available not only to the government, but to the public. Without disclosing the proprietary aspects of this. Now, we're doing this in the context where almost every major government and commercial website so far has been breached multiple times. And we also know that the government doesn't have any better track record with its portals than industry does.
Right.
And I again, like I said, what possibly could go wrong? Well, a lot could go wrong here. And there's a lot of unknowns. Now, I applaud GSA for trying to use technology, maximize technology.
And, absolutely.
And I applaud them for getting data into the hands of the buyers. Like no reasonable person can complain about that. I would walk very cautiously, though, into the world of these portals and websites and sharing of data and protecting data, because we all suffer from what a psychologist would call the superiority complex, or the illusion of knowledge, the illusion that we can control these technologies better than we actually can.
Right. And I think there's another issue, too. I think that companies need to think about when they submit their transactional data, they need to market as proprietary, because there is a process, to the extent the government wants to release it to the public, of having to go back to the submitter and actually get their views on it and address that. And that's going to be interesting to see how GSA works through that issue as well.
Yeah, it is. Now, GSA says that the data will only be publicly released at some sort of high aggregate level as not to be attributable to different company.
Right.
I mean, we'll have to see if that holds up or not, but that will provide certainly some protection. But you're right about marking. I've actually seen some companies put in their proposals without marking it. And that's not a smart idea.
Right.
Mark the heck out of the thing.
Right, absolutely. So, Jonathan, we've really examined the new. We put it through the magic transactional data box, and out it came, and we have a show done. So I want to thank my guest today, Jonathan Ierney. He's a partner at Shepherd Mullin, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.